title to Joshua Tower to the leaders. After a long time had passed, and the Lord had given Israel rest from all their enemies around them, Joshua, by then old and well advanced in years, summoned all Israel, their elders, leaders, judges and officials, and said to them, "I am old and well advanced in years. You yourselves have seen everything the Lord your God has done to all these nations for your sake. It was the Lord your God who fought for you. Remember how I have allotted as an inheritance for your tribes all the land of the nations that remain, the nations I conquered between the Jordan and the Great Sea in the west. The Lord your God himself will drive them out of your way. He will push them out before you, and you will take possession of their land, and the Lord your God, promised you. Be very strong, be careful to obey all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, and without turning aside to the right or to the left, do not associate with these nations that remain among you. Do not invoke the names of their gods or swear by them. You must not serve them or bow down to them, for you are to hold fast to the Lord your God, as you have until now. The Lord has driven out before you great and powerful nations. To this day, no one has been able to withstand you. One of you routs 1,000 because the Lord your God fights for you, just as he promised. So be very careful to love the Lord your God. But if you turn away and ally yourself with the survivors of those nations that remain among you, and if you intermarry with them and associate with them, then you may be sure that the Lord your God will no longer drive out these nations before you. Instead, they will become snares and traps for you, whips on your backs and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from the good land which the Lord your God has given you. Now I'm about to go to the way of all the earth. You know with all your heart and soul that not one of all the good promises the Lord your God has given you has failed. Every promise has been fulfilled, not one has failed. But just as every good promise of the Lord your God has come true, so the Lord will bring on you all the evil he has threatened, until he has destroyed you from the good land he has given you. If you violate the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods, and bow down to them, the Lord's anger will burn against you, and you will quickly perish from the good land he has given you."
We'll stand on every promise of your word. Tonight we're thinking about how we keep faithful to God. We're actually looking at Joshua 22, 23 and 24. So quite a big chunk this evening, and we're going to be covering and moving across those passages. So it'd be great if you've got a Bible handy. There are three main parts to the book of Joshua. I said this when we first started. Chapters 1 to 4, entering the land. Chapters 5 to 12, taking the land. And then the rest of the book, 13 through 21, is about possessing the land. You probably don't need me to remind you that we entered Iraq with the Allied forces, and we managed to enter quite easily. We managed to subdue it reasonably easily. But to actually keep it and retain it and pass it on with full security was actually very difficult. And that's before you look at Afghanistan. You'd have thought we learned the lessons from the Russian occupation of Afghanistan. But the Allied troops have been there. Many British lives have been lost in Helmand province. To take the land and to keep the land are completely different things. Tonight, Joshua, God, want to set before the people a very, very serious challenge. You're in the land. You've taken the land. What are you going to do to possess it and keep it? What is the secret? We come to one final section at the end. It is all about retaining the land, keeping the land that they've conquered. And the reason I've taken these three chapters together is because they are so unified. They serve one common purpose. We need to look at some of the detail within, but the common purpose is kind of a banner right across all three chapters. If we just took one little bit, I think we might lose the thrust of the writer's main point. Let me show you the common theme before we go any further. Look in Joshua 22, verse 5. Be very careful to keep the commandment and the law that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you. To love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to obey his commands, to hold fast to him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. 23, verse 6. Be very strong, be careful to obey all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, without turning aside to the right or to the left. Do not associate with those nations that remain among you. Do not invoke the names of their gods or swear by them. You must not serve them or bow down to them. But you are to hold fast to the Lord your God as you have until now. And then chapter 24, to prove it's a unifying theme, verse 14, now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your forefathers worshipped beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. Can you get the picture? Can you get the main message tonight? These chapters have got a unifying message. But each chapter is actually a progression. Chapter 22, in Joshua 22, Joshua summons the 2.5 tribes. We'll talk about that in a moment. In 23, Joshua summons all Israel's leaders. And in chapter 24, Joshua addresses the whole people. Can you see it's building up towards something here? There's a developing emphasis. It's a message to just a few thousand, and then to the leaders, and then to the whole nation. It's a message that is repeated over and over again because it's absolutely crucial. Interesting to see where the last chapter left us, where we left the other Sunday evening. The end of chapter 21 was a testimony to God's faithfulness. Not one of all the Lord's good promises to the house of Israel failed. Every one was fulfilled. And it's almost God saying to the people, I've delivered. I've done everything. Now what are you going to do in response? And then come the next three chapters. First point tonight, return of the eastern tribes. Can you remember the situation? When they were going into the land, the tribes, let me get this right, of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, they wanted to stay east of the Jordan. And Joshua said to them, sure, you can have land east of the Jordan, providing you go with your brothers west of the Jordan to help conquer the land. And that was the deal. They went. And now the land has been subdued. And Joshua 22 opens with Joshua saying to these tribes, these 2.5 tribes from the east, in verse 2, you have done all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded. You have obeyed me in everything I commanded. They have delivered and been faithful. For a long time now, to this very day, you have not deserted your brothers, but have carried out the mission the Lord your God gave you. And so they're told to go home to the east of the Jordan because they have done their job. Notice they have performed well, okay? Joshua says you've done a good job. You've been faithful. Can you imagine what they could have thought? They could have thought, well, you know, we've got to go west of the Jordan. We know we've got the east. That's ours. I suppose we'd better go. We'd better make an effort. And we'd better join in because we're part of one nation. But no, they've not done that. They've engaged fully in the work of God's kingdom. Joshua's a blunt leader. He commends them for their task and he sends them back. They have been involved in committed work and they assumed, I think, but it was for little personal benefit. It was for the good of God's kingdom. That is a good model for us. Wholehearted service, but they did get unexpected blessing, because they went back quite rich with all the trophies of the towns that they had captured. But then notice they are told to watch out. I wonder what you would have told them to watch out for. Make sure you subdue the land properly. Make sure you don't forget us. Joshua blesses them. But that's not his main concern. Before he blesses them, he urges them with that verse we read in verse 5, be careful to keep the commandment, the law that Moses gave you. Follow God, hold fast to him, and serve him well. That is Joshua's parting message to these 2.5 tribes as they go across the Jordan to the east. His one overall message is, guys, remain faithful to God. Don't give up. Don't turn to the false gods. Don't turn away from the one true living God. Keep your eyes focused on him and serve him. And you can imagine, Joshua is passionate about this because he knows what will happen if they walk out on God. And he urges them with all his being, watch out. Be careful. Keep to his commands. Obey him. Love him. Hold fast to him. Give him all your heart, your life, your soul. Imagine you were facing your death tonight. You'd only got a couple of days to live. What would be the number one message that you would want to give to your family, to your friends, to the people around you who love Jesus? What would you say to your kids? Make sure you study hard for a good job. Don't squabble, fat chance. Don't cry, remember the good times. Or would you urge your kids to love, follow Jesus with a passion? What would you say to your kids if you had to leave them? What would you say to your family if you had to leave them? Our final message would be quite revealing, wouldn't it? And then notice there is an act of faithfulness that gets seriously misunderstood. Joshua 22 verse 10. This is the tribes returning home, the 2.5 tribes. When they came to Geliloth, near the Jordan in the land of Canaan, the Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of Manasseh, built an imposing altar there by the Jordan. And when the Israelites heard they had built the altar on the border of Canaan in Geliloth, near the Jordan on the Israelite side, the whole assembly of Israel gathered at Shiloh to go out to war against them. What were they thinking? The Israelites saw the 2.5 tribes going home and thought they haven't even got to the other side of the Jordan before they're going to build an altar to a foreign god and bow down and worship him. And they say, we're going to go and sort them out. We'll go to war against them because God has not given us the land for this to happen straight away. But the 2.5 tribes need to be listened to. Come to verse 24. No, is their explanation. We did it for fear that someday your descendants might say to us, what did you have to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? The Lord has made the Jordan a boundary between us and you. You Reubenites and Gadites, you have no share in the Lord. So your descendants might cause ours to stop fearing the Lord. That is why we said, let us get ready and build an altar, but not for burnt offerings or sacrifices. On the contrary, it is to be a witness between us and you and the generations that follow. And we will worship the Lord at his sanctuary with our burnt offering, sacrifice, and fellowship offerings. Then in the future, your descendants will not be able to say to ours, you have no share in the Lord. Fascinating how a story like this just ends up in so much miscommunication. They nearly go to war over it because the remaining tribes see an act of disloyalty. But the act of disloyalty is actually an act of loyalty, and assumptions are made. But you know, there is something refreshing about this. There is a fear amongst the 2.5 tribes that they might lose God's blessing, and they don't want to lose it. Remember Achan? One man's actions lost the national blessing. I reckon we must commend these tribes for their watchfulness. They haven't got it wrong. The altar isn't for offerings. They're not going to bow down to a false image yet. It's a reminder. Now, you might not understand this at first glance, neither might I. And you think, well, it's a river. It's kind of like crossing the Thames. It's not like that at all. The Jordan Valley is unique on planet Earth. Let me read a quote. There may be something on the surface of another planet to match the Jordan Valley. There is nothing on this. No other part of our Earth, uncovered by water, sinks 300 feet below the level of the ocean. But here we have a rift more than 160 miles long, from 2 to 15 miles broad, which falls from sea level to as deep as 1,292 feet below it at the coast of the Dead Sea, while the bottom of the latter is 1,300 feet deeper still. Can you see what a huge barrier the Jordan River and the Jordan Valley is? The 2.5 tribes are concerned. They don't want to be forgotten. Neither do they want their descendants to forget God and the tabernacle across the Jordan. So here we see efforts to remain faithful to God. Really, Joshua is saying words are insufficient. Anybody can use words. What's required are actions. Actions that permeate our lives and our lifestyle. Let me ask all of us, is keeping faithful to God our top priority? Second point tonight, Joshua's farewell message. 23, Joshua 23, found in three parts. First, remember and learn. Joshua 23, 3 to 5. I haven't got time to read it, but Joshua says, remember everything that God has done. And he reminds them, going back years and years and years, what God has done. I was never a great fan of history at school. I was put off in my second year at secondary school by the fact that my history teacher used to drone on, and then he used to pull one blackboard from in front of another one, and there was loads of writing on it, and he'd say, write that down into your exercise books. And that was history. In fact, the only exciting thing that ever happened in my history lessons was when the pipe in his pocket caught fire. That's why I dropped it as soon as possible. But you know, history is extremely important. I'm learning that more and more as I get older. It teaches us to learn from the past to influence and affect the future. That's exactly what Joshua is doing. He's saying, look back what God has done. He's been faithful. He's been true. He's never let you down. He's kept all of his promises. Now, on the basis of what God has done, his faithfulness over the generations, in the future, you need to follow him and stick to him. They need to remember, which leads to obedience. That comes in verses 6 to 8 that we read a few moments ago. Be strong. Careful to obey everything. Don't associate with nations that have false gods. It is about obedience. We need to understand how obedience works. You see, the standard of obedience is set. Joshua says, obey all that is written in the book of the law. Basically, in our New Testament day, that is saying, obey everything that God has given us in his word. But obedience has got to be properly based. It's not just an experiment. Joshua says the obedience of the people is to be based on something concrete, is to be based on God's law, his word. And our obedience to God must be based on his word, on the Bible. Please don't ever come and tell me God has spoken to you, God has told you to do something, and it's different to what you read in the Bible. Because God doesn't do that. Our obedience has got to be rooted in God's word. And notice the form of obedience here. Joshua's command is about action. Don't turn aside from it. keep away from idols. It's really absolutely clear, isn't it? Isn't it black and white? Don't go and worship the Baals. Don't go and worship the false gods. Don't make yourself an idol with your hands and bow down and worship it. Don't get mixed up with the foreign people, as they will lead you into idolatry. It's obedience over the whole life. And God requires obedience from us 7 days a week, 365 and quarter days a year, year after year. But there's a warning. The warning comes in verse 12. But if you turn away and ally yourselves with the survivors of these nations that remain among you, and if you intermarry with them and associate with them, then you may be sure that the Lord your God will no longer drive out these nations before you. Instead, they'll become snares, traps for you, whips on your back, thorns on your eyes, until you perish from this good land which the Lord your God has given you. The warning's really clear. Walk out on God, walk out on blessing. Joshua knows Israel's past. He's seen the 40 years in the wilderness. He knows that people have a wonderful ability to read something, to listen to something, and ignore it. Last Sunday, I was walking down to church, down New Street. And as I was walking down to church, there was a big notice next to some shiny black paint on a window ledge. And you guess what it said? It said, wet paint. What is it about notices that say wet paint? Am I the only one who has a problem with them? It looked so shiny. It looked so lovely. I just had to check it. You'd think at the age 45 I'd have learnt that there was no need to do that anymore, wouldn't you? The worst thing was it wasn't wet, it was dry and it was shiny and it looked absolutely lovely. And I checked there this evening as I was walking past and it's now got loads of dust on it. But you know, speed limits are meant for bad drivers, they're not meant for all of us. Keep out signs are just meant for vandals, they're not meant for ordinary people. And can you see that suddenly we receive instructions, we read signs, we read warnings, and we think they're for somebody else, not for us, and we dismiss them. Jesus warned people time and time again. Jesus warned people to flee from the coming wrath. He warned repeatedly of hell. Every mention of hell was designed to warn people to flee from it because Jesus wanted people to be saved and rescued, yet the majority never listened. That is tragic. God warns us in his word. He warns us explicitly about various things. He's really clear. And this comes out very clearly in this passage here. If you are a Christian, you are not to marry an unbeliever. God's word is absolutely black and white on that. You're not to have a love of money. You're not to forsake your first love. And loads of commands. Why does God make those commands? He makes those commands to protect you, to protect me, and to keep your life close to him. The warnings are there for a reason. The wet paint warning should have been there for a reason, so I didn't come to church with a big black blob on the end of my finger. But when you read God's warnings, listen so carefully. It might save you from an awful lot of trouble and pain. And then the last thing tonight, covenant renewal. This takes us into Joshua 24. And first of all, the covenant history is remembered. And in verses 1 through 13, you have got a summary of what God has done from Abraham right through to this point. Why does Joshua do that? Well, look at chapter 24, verse 14. Here's the response. Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your forefathers worshipped beyond the river and in Egypt. Learn the lessons from the past, he says. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods your forefathers served beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. What's Joshua saying to the people? He's saying, you've got a choice, guys. I've presented before you what God has done. He's brought you to this point, given you this glorious, this fantastic land. I'm going to follow God because it's the root of blessing. But you've got a choice, he says to the people. You can go back. You can worship the gods of the Egyptians. You can worship the gods of the Amorites if you want to. Make your mind up. Who are you living for? Who are you serving? Joshua is obviously fearful. And then there's covenant modeling. Because Joshua presents the people with that option. And he says, make your mind up. Decide which way you're going to live. But notice Joshua's position. I'm standing firm. I've followed God. I've followed God through 40 years in the wilderness when everyone else had a different view. I'm an old man now, he says. My time's running out. And I'm going to go to the grave following this God whom I love. I love that testimony. Faithful testimony, consistent living throughout life. And when Joshua dies, he dies well. Do you know one of the things that I desire as a pastor for those that I have spiritual care for? One of my biggest desires is that you finish the race well. That you get to the finishing line. And you're following Jesus more closely than you've ever followed him. And you're better prepared than you were ever before to meet him. Face to face. So that you can live with him for the whole of eternity. We're called to live consistent Christian lives. And we are called to finish well. Not get over the line with a heart attack. Or in the words of Corinthians, with the smell of burning. I want you to finish well, just like Joshua. And you know, the church needs leaders who are role models. It's easy to talk the talk. To live the life is difficult. To stand out from the crowd is tough. And Christian leaders like Joshua need to be role models. I find that quite frightening. They need to set the example. And sometimes they need to set the example when they don't get things right too. And model how to put them right. And then lastly here in this section, covenant promises are renewed. Verse 19 through to 27 are all about covenant renewal. And you can't help feeling as you read this that Joshua is concerned. He's going to die. And his biggest fear is that the people, and he knows the heart and the spirit of the people, his fear is that once he's gone, once the elders have gone, once this generation's passed on, the next generation will not love the Lord in the same way. So he sets up a stone as a reminder to keep them on track. The Israelites renew their covenant with God. And yet, the writer gives us just a little hint of what is round the corner. Just before he wraps up, Joshua 24, verse 31, the writer says this. See if you can find the hint within it. Israel served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him and who had experienced everything that the Lord had done for Israel. Can you see what's kind of caveated in there? They followed God while Joshua and the elders were alive. But the rest is a different story. God has been faithful to us. He remains faithful. But what about us? Are we going to keep faithful to him? God makes it absolutely clear how we do that. If we truly love him, we will obey his commands. John is really clear in his letters. He says, don't tell me you love God, but have no passion to keep his commands. Because you can't do that. It's a contradiction in terms. If you truly love me, you will truly delight to keep my commands. My prayer is that we would have hearts that truly seek after God, that love him, that want to follow him, and that are really keen to seek out his commands so we can follow them.